Welcome back to episode 31 of the TV Talk Machine podcast. I am your co-host, Jason Snell. Across the internet from me, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, your host, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hello.
Hello, Jason. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I don't travel nearly as much as you do, so no? I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah, I am doing too much travel. Too much travel. But I agreed to speak at a few things, and then I looked at the calendar and thought, oh, God, those are all happening within like 4 weeks of each other. So I'm in and out. I think we may have a guest host again next week, but you know,
I know who that would be.
Yeah, well, we will break out the bat phone and call David Lohr and see if he's available to do it. And if not, then you know, maybe I'll Skype in from, I don't know, a train.
You need to cut back and do a little more TV watching.
Yeah, you're right. I do. I am horribly behind now in my TV viewing, which is a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been letting it go. We've got an email with some suggestions of things for me to watch though, so I think we'll get to that.
I saw that
from
a
bad bad person.
As soon as anybody whiffed something that was not good, they said, "Let's make Jason watch it."
Yeah.
I like that idea. Yeah,
there's a trend happening there. Hey, there is a show that is airing that I have seen the episode that has aired so far, so I'm like not behind on something, and it's Orphan Black. I watched the premiere last weekend of Orphan Black.
Yeah. I'm still fielding messages from people who say, Orphan Black season 3, you're not going to review it? And look, it's one of my favorite shows, but I didn't get a chance to get to it in time. But, you know, I still love it, and I want to hear your thoughts first.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Shoot.
All right. What we talked about last week was how I didn't care as much about the conspiracy as I did about the characters, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So so we're watching, and the premiere opens with, you know, a lot of conspiracy, like, oh, there's this new there's the Project Castor, and there's boy clones, and where is Helena, and all of these things happen, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, Orphan Black plot, right? Because it's just not. We've actually got a couple letters that we'll get to about Orphan Black too. But that was my thought, was like the plot. I just kind of don't care. I mean, it can be exciting and it leads to exciting things, and the overarching mystery is okay, I guess, about how this all got created. And then all of a sudden there are those scenes where clones are forced to masquerade as other clones, and you've got Tatiana Maslany playing one of her characters playing another one of her characters, and then another performance of the same thing happening. And I just started laughing, and I was like, this is why I watch this show.
Yeah,
because that is great character stuff and great performance stuff and funny and interesting. And so after about, you know, so after about 15 minutes of like, I feel like obligatory plot set up for the season, then they went into one of these set pieces where you've got different clones in different places, and there's a character that makes Sarah extremely angry. Extremely angry, and I thought that was really great. And yeah, so in the end, it's like a microcosm of my thoughts about the show in general, which is every time I think, well, are they gonna stray into that conspiracy stuff eventually, then I get those great moments, and I think, nope, that's it. That's why I love this show, is those moments are just fantastic when they happen.
Yeah, the idea that you can have a clone playing a different clone to another clone who's playing a different clone is great. I mean, it's just such a deep dive.
Oh.
And Tatiana's Maslany is so great in both of those rows playing four people. And it was great. I love it. But, you know, here's the thing. I don't have nearly as much resentment about the conspiracy stuff. Yeah, it doesn't bother me as much because I don't think it's actually poorly done. And I think that there's just – here's my take, because my Twitter feed basically lives on all kinds of stuff like this. I think people are overwhelmed with shows that have this. And I just, I don't actually, because I'm not in all the Marvel world stuff. And
that's
and
true.
So I'm not bogged down with what everybody else is, so that when they get to Orphan Black, they're like, oh God, another conspiracy. I can't figure it out. I'm perfectly fine with it.
I, it's not, I mean, for me, I just feel like it's, it's not why I watch the show. More than that, I hate it. And there was a moment last year where they had like the Prolethians, and they also had the you know, Leaky and the Foundation or whatever, and there was like a question if that had been split in two, and I thought, this is a lot of things. I've now kind of lost track. I feel like they are, this year, they are trying to simplify it at least a little bit, which is good, because, you know, again, I like it that it's a driving force. I like that there is this question of like, you know, where did the, what is the plan for these clones? Where did they come from? Why are they here? I think that's all fine. But in the end, it's more important to me that it drives the characters forward than that I get answers, if that makes any sense.
Sure. Yeah. I think in some way you're right that they are look like they're starting to streamline it into where did they come from and who's now controlling them. And I think that's, and they've cut some of the extraneous alt cult aspects of spinoff groups, pared that down. So I think we're getting a little more cohesion.
Yeah, I think so. And then you know, for all my belly aching, then there are those scenes, and you know, it's very rare that I have a moment in a TV show where I'm basically shouting at the TV for the main character to murder somebody in cold blood, and yet that's what happened. I mean, I was like, she should just kill him. She should just go into that bathroom and find a weapon and turn around and murder him, which is not quite what happens.
But it was close.
But it was a close thing, and it's just, that was really... That's those moments that surprise you. There's a suggestion. There's a character. I mean, for people who haven't seen it, they may not even know, which just pops and whistles to them. But there's a character who is suggesting the indiscriminate, well, I mean, just the killing of the clones as if they are not important, and not understanding that they're talking to a person that they don't think is who they're talking to. Right. And the implication that this has happened before, that they've just gone in Helsinki. Mm-hmm. And they just killed all the clones who were there. They just killed them. Like, your lives are meaningless to us. And this rightly infuriates Sarah. And it's great. I mean, those are the things. It's like, that's the power of that show, is that you not only care about Sarah, but you care about the sisters, right? They care about each other, and there's a love for them that is surprising, I think, that they are so attached, and the show portrays it that way and is not afraid of saying, you know, there is a bond between them, but that it makes us feel that way too, where it's like outrage that this person is like, we'll just kill them all and move on. That's very powerful. So I thought they did a great job.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. So people should watch it.
Yeah, it's really good. You should, if you haven't seen it, you should, you know, go back to the beginning and watch it. But you won't be disappointed.
This is one that where you start from the beginning, and it's just, look, the first two seasons are, I mean, we just started the third, like literally first episode, second episode tomorrow. First two seasons are, I love them. They're so great. Yeah. So just watch it.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, and they're not long seasons either. It's not like it's a death march. I think they're like 8 or 10 episodes. They're pretty short.
You can get through it really quickly.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, The Americans, I saw you wrote about it. It just wrapped up its season, right?
It did. And you know what? I think this is going to be a little bit...
What went wrong, Tim? What went wrong?
Well, it's funny because I think this is a little... What I wasn't going to do this because it happened that the episode happened on my birthday. And so I talked to my boss, one of them, and said, look, I'm not doing this. We don't have to check on at the season ender of every show. That's a bad precedent. That's not something we should do. And besides, I'm going to be out having a great time, and I'm not going to worry. Well, late at night I come back, and I watched the episode anyway. And I was like, I have some thoughts on this. But then next morning I woke up, and I saw like a bunch of people, critics, raving about it. And I thought, wow, because I have issues. So I thought, you know what, it's time. I got to put this together. So it ended up being like a column that was, I think, on one side, supportive of how a lot of fans felt. Not all of them, because a lot of them were like, yeah, I wish this had been in there and that had been in there, but I'm okay with it and I went for it. And I call those hardcore fans. They're gonna do what no matter what. So in some ways, it was me saying, wow, here's an instance where pretty much everybody I know as a critic. I mean, some of them, like Alan Sepinwall, said he liked the episode but pointed out some of the glaring faults that I agreed with, that I pointed out. But there were a lot of people who I think critics gave it a free pass because it's their favorite show. And there's some agreement among all of us in a way that right now it's probably the best show on television, and whether Mad Men or Game of Thrones this season can equal that or better it remains to be seen, because they just started, whereas this was the last episode. So, you know, and Americans has been killing it this season, right? So everybody's kind of on board critically. And I thought, oh, here's an interesting situation where I think the show's getting a free pass for a stumble. It didn't take away from the season. It just didn't stick the landing in the finale. And so I wrote something about that, which was interesting because I got some shade tossed my way a couple times from critics online. But I think it did hit a nerve with viewers. And to sum up what had happened was a major storyline was hinted at in the penultimate episode, where it's like, okay, this character is going to be killed. It's clearly they set up that literally in the final episode that she has to die. And that's a cliffhanger in itself going into the finale. And then what happens is that character is never mentioned again. And she doesn't pop up. And so we don't know what happens. And then three quarters of the way through the finale, one of the main characters does set somebody else up to take the fall, which means the woman doesn't have to die. It's a very bad way of saying she lived. And her being out of it, you wait the whole episode. Where the heck is Martha? Where's she coming? And you wait, and she doesn't show up. Not only that, the beginning of the season and much of the season, one of the first or secondary storylines, if we were to say that Philip and Elizabeth, the Russian spies, the story with their daughter, Paige, is the main storyline this season. Would you agree?
I'm going to agree with everything you say because I'm approximately two seasons behind.
Okay. So anyways,
great one. Yes, yeah. I agree. Great.
So that's the main thing. It's like the issue with Paige wanting to find out about them is the whole thing about season three. But one of the B storylines is that the Russians put Philip in a very precarious and uncomfortable situation where he has to turn a very young girl, like 16 years old. I don't think she's even 17 yet. She might be 17. He's going to have to turn her because her parents are American scientists, and not turn her into a Russian spy. He's going to have to sleep with her and curry favor and use his access to her sexually to, like, you know, plant secret devices in their house. And he's rightfully very, very uncomfortable with that because his daughter's not much older. It's a really interesting storyline. And he has a lot of problems with it, and it's affecting the marriage. It's affecting his relationship with the center, which is where the Soviet group is. And in the final episode, no mention of the girl at all. She's kind of dropped off the storyline, so you're kind of like, what's going on with Kimmy? And then in the finale, not even a mention. So it's like, okay, wait a minute. And then at the end, I'm not ruining anything here. They're introducing other storylines going into season four. So what I said was, hey, great. You got into the season three finale and you strung out a lot more rope for stories that are going to go into season four. Plus you ended on a cliffhanger. And yet you really have to service the viewers who spent the whole season three. They want some kind of resolution. And you didn't give it to them. All you gave them was this Lost-like thing where you're like, I answered one of your questions or half of it, and here's three more going into season four. Come join me. And my feeling was, okay, you botched it because it wasn't very thrilling. We had some resolution, but nothing that was too surprising. The season rested on this one big kind of like moment at the 59th minute, but everybody who has a brain knew that was coming anyway. So, and it's going to set up season four. So I felt like that was not a big deal. And yet you dropped all these other storylines and then you added storylines. And my feeling is, okay, The Americans is the greatest show on TV right now. It is very much viewer starved. Not enough people are watching it. And so people who are not totally all in, they're going to look at that finale and say, oh, you know what? No, I'm not coming back.
So what is the, I mean, I think this is interesting because you even your story sort of has to say, look, I say this is a good show, but now let me criticize it.
Yeah.
Is there, I mean, when you talk about the other TV critics sort of, you know, just being supportive or not talking about the disappointment, I mean, hey, if they thought it was a great finale, then that's fine. But is there a sort of feeling like if something is really good, you should, that it's sort of like, let's not confuse the issue by criticizing it. Is that something that can tend to happen where it's like, because this is a difficult situation. You are praising the show overall, but then you say, but I have some issues. And that's a harder thing than to say this show's bad or this show is good.
Yeah, and I think what happened was, to answer the second question part of it first, I think what happened was I did have concerns, and I think it just literally came down to, hey, great season, and probably the, you know, equal to the other three. I think I hold them all in high esteem, but I think the show is just getting better as it goes. It just finishes season three, amazing season, but it kind of tripped up here at the last episode, and it doesn't take away from my appreciation for the show. I think it was a plotting mistake. I think there were a couple of plotting mistakes. And I think as a critic, that was really evident to me. Like, okay, these guys have too many stories and they've got too many plates spinning. And they decided to spend some time, interestingly, on these three plates over here, where one of them was super important. The other two, no, I could have missed those people. Mm. But you can't miss these plates that didn't even appear in the episode. They weren't even spinning. We couldn't see them wobble. They were just not even in the episode. So I think that it's fair game to call that. And I think if you don't call that as a critic, I question maybe – I don't know. I mean, it's your right to say you love the episode. One of the responses – I will not name names. One of the responses that came back on Twitter was from somebody who said – what is this idea that like an artistic show should service its audience? And she's like, that's ridiculous. And I thought, well, that's great for I stayed out of it. I didn't get into a big pissing match. But I thought, okay, you know, that's great if you're HBO or Showtime, because you know you don't have to have. It doesn't matter how many people watch your show. But this is a show where the head of FX has said many times, God, I wish more people were watching The Americans. You know, not only in public in front of a microphone, but I've talked to him too, where he's shaking his head like, man, it's just, I wish we had more people to watch the show. And I can tell you the reason that show is on the air right now is it's going to be like Emmy magnet. It's their new centerpiece show. I think you have to, when I say service the audience, I'm thinking you're at an ad supported cable channel. You're not an HBO. So yeah, you got to give people what they want. And not everybody is like the critics, right? Not everybody's like, oh, it's the greatest show on the air. No matter what you do, I'll come back. I had a number of people after they read my story say, yeah, I'm pissed.
And well, is there I think there's a contract with the audience. And again, yeah, if a show wants to subvert the expectations as a work of art, then, you know, fair enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds to me like the idea here is there's kind of a contract with the audience that if you're setting a bunch of storylines in place and you're telling these stories in a rhythm that is generally season by season, that in the penultimate episode of a season, if you're setting up some major resolution for some storylines and then the final episode doesn't deal with them at all, there's a feeling of sort of like, why did I watch this season if you're just adding more plots and not resolving any of the existing storyline? Does that seem right? Like there's sort of a little bit of a compact between the show and the audience,
yeah,
that some of the stuff is going to get, you know, I'm going to tell you not the whole story of everything, but some of the story is going to get resolved as other things spin out?
Yeah, and I think that applies up until... If we're talking like top tier shows, I think that applies up until the series finale, when I think that the creator can do whatever they want to do, he or she. Huh. And, you know, you can have Tony go out like that and create this ambiguous ending, which is brilliant. You can keep Walt alive or kill him or whatever you want to do. You can all these things that you want to do on these series. You can kill main characters. You can drop whole storylines if you don't think that that's important. And the idea, like Sopranos, and it's just like, you know, whatever happened to them, and that's how I want it to end. I think that the creator has that. But when you're in season and you're not done for the whole, and you're going to come back the next year, yeah, I agree, Jason. Yeah, I think you have to have something. And I think people will say, "Oh no, it's artistic. They can do whatever they want." Sure, do that at your own peril,
right?
Because you are now in the most complicated TV environment that's ever been in existence. Nothing like it ever in the history of television. And people will walk away. And if you're ad supported like this, that's what's going to happen. And, you know, just from a critical standpoint, Jason, what I felt like a little bit, and part, I didn't even put this in there, but this is kind of what raised my hackles, right? You know, I'm the last person to support Homeland.
Uh-huh.
And you know, and Homeland has already defied my trick me twice. I won't even talk about you anymore. So in the fourth season, I gave them credit for making a comeback, and it had a lot of asterisks in it, but amongst people at Showtime and the people who make the show, it was duly noted that, you know, after I had basically stomped on it and cut its head off 1,000 times, I came back and said, you know what? They're making an effort. They're fixing things. This is a pretty thrilling season. It's not perfect. It's pretty thrilling. And I wrote that. And people, even other critics, joked around like, I want to write that, but I'd rather you write it because I really think that they're going to blow it. And in the end, the season finale for Homeland, I think, was universally panned as like, what? Nothing happened. It was like, that's not a season finale. That is like a fifth episode. And for me, it was like, okay, wait. Oh, no one really loves Homeland to the point where we'd hold it up in awe as a piece of art. It's a magnet. Sure. It's polarizing. Sure. But if everybody's going to jump on and say, okay, they screwed up the finale, I think you have to be of the same mind when you get to the Americans, a show you're so much superior. They messed the ending up too. So let's be fair about it. So, but that's just one man's opinion.
All right. Sure. Sure. No, it is a commercial endeavor. You want to give people a reason to come back in the next season. And if not resolving plot lines, I don't know. It's an interesting decision, but if you end up feeling like you just kind of got ripped off, I can totally understand that. I don't think people expect to see dangling plot threads in the penultimate episode, and then, you know, you kind of expect resolution and, you know, at the end of a season. Look, I'm watching The Flash, right? Mm-hmm. Flash has got about 5 different things going on at once in terms of storyline. If we get to the end of the season and literally the season finale cranks up the tension on one or two of the other storylines, and then all the rest are just left dangling, I will feel unfulfilled, right? I'm not saying that you can't do cliffhangers or anything like that, but I found like when Joss Whedon, his shows generally didn't have season-ending cliffhangers, and I found it really refreshing. That's one of the things I loved about The Wire, is that The Wire's penultimate episode was the big blowout,
yeah.
and then the last episode of the season was the kind of aftermath.
Yeah,
and I really liked that, because it felt like the season was a journey and it was fulfilling, and yeah, maybe there are some loose ends, but you know, I personally, as a viewer, would much rather see that than the feeling of like, does this come, I wonder with the Americans if this comes from a place of fear, where it's like we've got to load up even more to convince people to come back next season. But I think that can backfire and make you feel unfulfilled, like I'm not going to even bother coming back because you didn't answer any of the questions that you were asking.
Yeah, I think that that's what it does. And there's so many strands into this. I think when we're talking about critics and everybody raving about it, and then we were talking about it, and people who follow a lot of critics tend to be in love with shows and television.
Yeah.
So we're kind of all in. But I'm happy to hear from the people who were like, you know what? No, I do feel ripped off. I don't know if I'll watch again, or if I do, I'll wait until I know that they're going to do it. But for me, I looked at it structurally, and I thought, this is just it happens. You just make a decision that's the wrong decision. You know, it's like when, you know, Last Man Standing turned its main character into a dick. It's just the wrong decision to make. In this situation, I think they broke the season down and they plotted it out. And I think that they made a mistake by saying, we're going to keep this part. Literally, there was an element that's, I don't know how long it took in this series, that I would have been fine had they not addressed that yet. Because I think that's a slow burn. Like, there's a guy in Russia that the Russians are trying to make him like work his ass off and help catch up on the stealth bomber. Now, that's a long play. So, And they give him a certain amount of time in this episode, but of course there was no resolution. It's still being played. It's a long con. These other two elements were not long cons. They kind of had to be like discussed. I considered the Russian thing like a D storyline, so I was surprised it was in there. But when I looked at it, when I thought about it, Jason, I thought, okay, I think in the case of the element where I'm most upset, where the character is probably going to be killed, and then she doesn't even pop up in the next episode, I think the decision they made, I can't be right about this, was, you know what? We're going to probably have to do that, but we don't want to do it real quick. We want to draw it out because she's a great actor and the audience is connected to her. So if that's our ultimate goal, let's get like 5 or 6 episodes about it. And I just don't think they had time to do it, and they decided to leave it. In the case of the girl, the uncomfortable situation with the girl, I don't really know where that story is going, because I don't know what they're going to get out of that. So maybe they thought, you know, that's a story that we can wait on too. So they just made some decisions in the room when they were breaking the season. And I think those are mistakes, just plain and simple. Hmm.
We should talk about Happy-ish, which premiered. How are you feeling? Are you happy-ish?
I'm not even happy-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and I think but you know, I love to write about stuff like this because like the finale for the Americans, it's interesting decisions were made.
This is your failure analysis section, yes. Right? I know definitely. You love that.
Yeah, it's definitely all about failure analysis. And in my review, I said, look, maybe this show was cursed at the beginning because they gave us a very long lead time sneak peek of a 15-minute clip or something, maybe not even that long, that starred Philip Seymour Hoffman, one of the great actors of our time. And then it was great, and it was funny, and it was the place was buzzing as soon as it happened, and they were still a long way from finishing it. And then, of course, he died tragically.
Yeah.
So Philip Seymour Hoffman's gone. They take a long time. They recast. They get Steve Coogan, who is not the problem, by the way, and they bring the series back. And it's like, okay, maybe we wanted this legendary actor, but Steve Coogan is not the problem as his replacement. The show is a mess, and it's in a way, it's very stagey, and it's lectury, and it's soapboxy, and it tries to be cutting edge, and which I hate to say the word, and it tries to be badass, and it's not. It looks childish, and it's trying to be tough, and it doesn't really pull that off. And those are the moments where I just despise it. But in the parts where it works, there is a real show there. I just, you know, it's about a 44-year-old advertising executive in New York, married to a nice woman. Catherine Hahn is a great actress. They got one small kid. The Steve Coogan as the father worries about everything. They bring in – his firm brings in these 25-year-old Swedish dudes to take over, like, and he's too old. He feels too old. He feels like he's going to get fired. He used to be in control. Now the Swedes are talking about viral this and tweeting that, and he's out of his element. There is something there for a show. And when it does well, it's when they talk about those elements. Not so much the age gap, because they're kind of botching that too, but when they talk about advertising and feeling old and aging yourself out, and then also worrying about, okay, I might lose my job, but I also might have cancer, or, you know, there's stuff about aging that could really work in there. And when that's working, Jason, that's a good show. I watch the hell out of that show, but that's not the show that it wants to be. Cause as soon as it gets through one of these great moments where it's perfectly well written and acted, all of a sudden it spins on its heel and it does something that like a 14-year-old boy wrote it.
Yeah, so is it the lack of an editor? They just gave too much to the creator and just like let him be as self-indulgent as he wants, and
yeah,
nobody's
absolutely
there to say no.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, like, if people go back and read that review, you don't have to have seen the series yet, and you can check it out if you want. I think it actually just debuts this weekend. And there's the first pilot is online for free right now. So if you read the review, we'll link to it. You'll get to a part in the review where I say, okay, here's a perfect example. I'm going to repeat a full scene, which is basically a monologue that happens in a doctor's office. And you tell me if you think this is too much. And I think anybody who read that is like, oh my God, this is not drama. This is not television. This is the author at a book reading an essay. And even Catherine Hahn, the actress, is great. She couldn't even pull it off. It's like, what? You don't sound like a person. You sound like a novelist sitting in front of a mirror. And I just thought, oh, this is stagey and awful. And so there's too much of that in it. I just wonder why I honestly wonder why Showtime didn't step in and say, okay, buddy, you're a pretty good writer, but half of this is better than all of it. And it's his first show, to my knowledge. They should have said, look, this is great for your essays and stuff. And when you go on This American Life, you know, Shalal Moslender is the guy. So that works there. It doesn't work on TV because we're a drama. We have to have moving parts. We actually are being filmed. So that to me was the fallout. And it's unfortunate because way back when, anybody who saw that clip with Philip Seymour Hoffman thought, okay, this Happy-ish is going to kick ass.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
You know, yeah. It's
another
great
reminder you can't judge something by its clips,
yeah,
or the star.
It's great that they went ahead and made it, right? Even though it had been sold as being this vehicle for Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Mm-hmm.
But that's too bad to hear that it's got I hate it. That may be the thing that disappoints me most of all is when somebody who's incredibly talented ends up doing kind of poor work because there's nobody there to stop them and like put them, give them some constraints that they have to work inside.
Yeah, that's what they need, an editor. Yeah, yeah, and somebody oversight. This is where you need notes. I hate to say it. That needs notes.
Wow. Mad Men. I noticed you wrote a couple things about Mad Men. You wrote sort of a take on the latest episode, and you started to see patterns in the season. you're like big picture, like reading the tea leaves about what's going on with Mad Men.
Yeah, a little bit. And that's, you know, anybody who does these. Well, I mean, I always say some people just do recaps, and some people do actual bonus criticism, and that's kind of where that falls.
Bonus criticism
in the deconstruction. But here's the thing, though. I think that people are panicking because there's only like four episodes left now. And so three have aired, and they're like, why you introduced this Diana character, and she's taken away from what about all of my other characters? And so I wrote about her prior to the episode. And then they had a couple of other elements where in the current one where people we've never seen before pop into the lives of our Mad Men characters and in some way put up a mirror to them and reflect their new lifestyle and their new attitudes, or they are in and of themselves either a resolution. I have found a man. I've been looking for this man for my whole life. I found him. Or this character, this man, is not the resolution because the character chooses career over man. So what's happening, I think, is that we have very little time left. And one of the conceits, one of the patterns that Matthew Weiner is using is I think he's bringing these little satellites into the world of Mad Men. And it's effective because what it does is instead of just having our people talk to each other and really long story arcs about how are they going to get it wrong, he's basically speeding things up in only the Mad Men way of speeding things up, which is not fast. By bringing these people into their solar system, they meet during an episode, and we may not see them again. In the very first of the last seven, Peggy met a guy who she was going to run off to Paris with. She has not seen him again. Right? Don met this very mysterious waitress named Diana. In fact, in the first episode, it was filmed like almost like a dream sequence, and it got people talking constantly. But she may never come back again into his life. Very small impact. And in this last one, Joan has a suitor, and lots of big things happen in that, and lots of decisions are being talked about. This is literally the guy is only part of 1 hour, but he becomes this big turning point for Joan. And I think that's what we're going to get. We're going to get little satellites that come into the last four episodes, and we'll find out does Joan go with this guy or not. You know, does he stay in her life? Is it a good thing, or do we get a hint in the last episode that he's just kind of a jerk like all the other guys she's been with? You know, and so does Don learn something from the waitress, and does Peggy decide that her career can just wait and she found a really great guy and they're going to do something spontaneous like go to Paris? Either it happens or it doesn't, but ultimately it says something about the characters.
Interesting. Anything else about Mad Men going on? I mean, I think you're right. People are freaking out because it's that ticking clock. Like, you know, every minute you spend on something is a minute you're not spending on something else.
So yeah.
It's just out there. Everybody knows it.
And I think it's a good time to do the your mileage may vary, you know, thing, because it depends what you're looking for. There literally is no part of me that thinks there is going to be ultimate closure in Mad Men, and there's going to be some ambiguity about the main characters and what happens to them. That said, I will say that Weiner has brought some people back, and you're like, really? Did we need to see Glenn? You know, Glenn comes back from early seasons, and it's interesting, you know, and that's Matt Weiner's real life son. And so, and then there's other things you're like, you know, Lou Avery, he hasn't been in the first three episodes, or is barely in the third episode. We just thought he got fired. Turns out he didn't, but okay. I guess that little 5 minute cameo with Lou is Weiner's way of saying, yeah, hey, there's Lou.
Didn't go anywhere,
you know.
Still here.
What happens next? Are they going to do like a long pan of Santa Monica Beach, and there's going to be Sal?
Sure.
selling some guy sitting on a towel. I mean, it could happen that way. That could be the way that Matt chooses to wrap up characters' lives. But I think that what's really going to happen is it's not going to be it's not going to click shut like a book.
Wow. Sure. And again, like you said, when you're saying goodbye, that's time to make a artistic decision, and you kind of want to fulfill your audience, but you don't need to.
Right. And I think this is partly where the fan versus the critic comes in. Oh. Like, a fan wants everything to be locked down most of the time. And I'm not speaking for all of them, because I know a lot of them love gray areas. But I think from a critical standpoint, you're like, okay, this guy created this show 7, 8 years ago or 9 years ago, however long it was. And he's done a pretty amazing job of getting it to this part. Let's just let him drive the car all the way to the finish line and see what he comes up with. And just leave it in his hands. And then appreciate what he did, because he's the author. I always like that. I was like, okay, this guy wrote this great book. It wasn't my favorite ending, but he wrote it, and it's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. That's how I'm looking at it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as a viewer, I just want all my friends to be happy or something, right? But, right. That's fundamental to everything, right? I mean, people complain when TV shows kill off characters, or they add in, bad people who want to do bad things to your friends. And that's because you need conflict and you need drama. And, you may not like it, but you kind of need it.
Right.
And it's not the job of the creators to just give everybody what they want. They want to give them, something to think about and give them what they need. And it's not always the same.
And I think people forget sometimes, just sort of wrapping this little part up, I think people forget sometimes that once you go down that road to sort of satisfy everybody and wrap up storylines, you can't do it. You literally can't do it, because even if you think you did it, someone was going to say, okay, yeah, I know what's happening to Pete, but like, does he go bald? He looks like he's going to go bald. Does he go bald? Did Trudy ever marry again?
That's the big question. Baldness of Pete is the big right. question.
That'll pop up somewhere. It'll be a perfect ending, and somebody's like, "Yeah, I don't know. I really needed to see more Trudy, or something." Someone will have a gripe, I guarantee you. So, as the creator, you can't worry about shit that. You just got to do it.
I want to see a reconciliation between Peggy and her adopted baby.
Oh yes, By the way,
it turns out that the adopted baby is turns into the Russian from the Pine Barrens. It's just they're all connected.
Wow,
they're just all connected.
We're gonna get that Russian out of the woods one of these days, aren't we?
He's gonna come out. He's gonna pop. He's gonna pop into a sitcom somewhere and say, "Hey, comrade, where I was lost in the woods." That is a bad. We need Joe Garofoli to come back and give us some Putin for that. But
yeah, you could do the Russian.
Yeah, but that those are that Russian is the. The Russian in the Pine Barrens is the out in the Jersey swamps. He is the personification of people obsessing over stuff that is just that the creator doesn't care about.
Yeah, and never thought about it. I've had
at least 10 people ask me about the fact that in the new Star Wars trailer, Luke says, "The Force is strong in my family. My father has it." And people are like, "If that's in the present tense, does that mean Darth Vader is alive?" It's like, guys, it's dialogue taken from Return of the Jedi. That's not a plot twist. That's a quote. But people are why Occam's Razor? Occam's Razor is inconvenient. What if it's a secret twist? It's not a secret twist, folks. It's just not.
Oh my God.
Yeah. The Russian, he's out there. He's still walking around.
He's out there. I do love how people sort of extrapolate things out. So it's going to happen. No one's going to be satisfied. So I think that a lot of the good series creators, they satisfy themselves,
Yeah.
And you'll see them, including Matt Weiner's, and saying, "I did this for myself."
They got to live with this. This is going to be, in most cases, this is the definitive work of their entire career.
Absolutely.
And they got to live with it for the rest of their lives.
Exactly.
Let's leave the Russian and the Pine Barrens, and okay. I've got some listener feedback. Before that, we should mention anything new coming up that people should be looking out for.
Well, I think that the return of Penny Dreadful is worth people checking into. That'll be good.
All right, and have you seen it?
I have not. I watched all of the first season and loved it. So all right. I'm back on board.
Okay, so Showtime.
Yes.
Coming back soon.
Soon. Very soon.
Like, perhaps even as you listen to this, it may be on your TV right now. Turn around and watch it.
Next week. I will say that I think they are putting on, during the week of May 1 through 3 or whatever, they're putting on the first Penny Dreadful episode online for free again. Wow. They do that whole first taste is free thing.
Right, because then you can sign up for Showtime and watch the rest of it.
Exactly.
Brilliant. Yeah. Evil and brilliant. All right, we got just a few bits of feedback from the listeners. Alan in the 415, Alan in the +1 415, because as we know, we broadcast simultaneously day and date release internationally, the TV Talk Machine. We don't stagger our releases.
No, that's not.
They are simultaneous. You know, The Avengers 2 is already out in England.
Is it really?
I know. We have to wait a week here in America. It's un-American, I say.
We would never do that with TV Talk Machine.
No. No, it's everywhere. We are global. Global on
worldwide,
instantaneously global. Yeah. Anyway, Alan in the 415, error code of record, says, I watch Orphan Black, but as impressive as Tatiana Maslany's skills are with multiple characters, I have to admit the storyline is weak. In my opinion, stories are about characters, what they want, and how those desires conflict. But Sarah barely wants anything other than to be left alone. I would argue also that her daughter is safe. And we have little idea of what the other characters want because of the mysterious conspiracy. And we still don't know why clones are important at all. The world is full of people. Why are clones of any special value? So that's one. I mean, it sounds like he's sort of taking my side, although I don't feel this strongly about it because I feel like I think Sarah does want something. Sarah wants to live her life and have her daughter be safe. And I think what we've learned in the muddy conspiracy here is that Sarah's daughter is incredibly important because Sarah is the only clone to have naturally gotten, as far as we know, gotten pregnant and given birth.
Right.
And they care about her daughter and want to use her as a focal point of their research. And Sarah doesn't want that. So that to me, that's what Sarah wants. And that's the heart of Orphan Black. And then secondarily, it's the bond of the between the sisters that it feels real.
Yeah, and she's now gone from somebody I would argue that didn't really care anymore and didn't care about the other clones, just wanted her to like be protected and take care of her daughter, to she's trying to protect the sisterhood now.
Yeah, she's really mad about Helena being taken, right? She's really mad about that. They're trying to save all of these sisters.
Yeah. So I think it's about something. I think it's patience. We'll get there, people.
Yeah. So Eric from the 0207, that is London, England, but you may know him.
This is England.
You may know him as, he's added a word to his title. He is International Hobo Eric. This is Hobo Eric, International from the 0207. The +42, 0207.
You know what? I've been shaken, so I was not even thinking that Hobo Eric would make a return, and now he's International Hobo Eric.
He is.
It's just gets more genius.
We're one-upping. He says, watch the Orphan Black premiere and a bit confused about who's what and which is the baddie. I hope I'm not the only one who thought they threw too much plot into this episode. If there's a hovering red ball of Rambaldi coming up next, that's an Alias reference. I'm out. By the way,
I got that. Yes.
By the way, my friends are now referring to me as Hobo Eric. I should start a cult.
You should start other like there's clones. There should be hobo dance party. Yeah. Hobo club, like clone club.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And Hobo Black. new series. Or Orphan Hobo. Or
International Brotherhood of Hobos.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh my God.
I whenever I get too confused in Orphan Black, I just go with it. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Because all of a sudden Sarah's playing a different clone and a different clone is playing Sarah and it's just a mind bending kind of thing. And, you know, I go with it, but I agree. It can be confusing, but I feel like Orphan Black has finally figured out the story it wants to tell. And it's just been slow playing us all along that, you know, because ultimately it needs to be about who did the clones, why did they do them, why do they want Sarah's daughter, what about the male clones. I mean, that answers need to eventually come, because right now it's just sort of these shadowy organizations, but I feel like they're getting there now. So
I think so too. And remember that Sarah's daughter has healing powers.
Oh, she does. You just take her blood and you can sort of heal Cosima anyway.
Yeah. You can healing powers out of her.
Yeah. All right, two more. Michael, who did not give us an area code,
boo,
yeah, says, I just saw.
He's now Hobo Michael. He has no.
Yeah, he has no address, no known address. And I'm going to boo him too because he said, I just saw last night's episode of CSI Cyber was called Selfie 2.0. The first thing I thought was, that's not a thing. And then I wish Jason was still reviewing the show. Well, I don't. But thank you, Michael. I did actually set a season pass on my TiVo for it, and I have like 8 episodes of CSI Cyber stacked up there in case I am feeling real, like if my self-esteem gets really, really low, I can put one of those on and just like sit in front of the TV and cry.
Well, it's almost like if we don't have you do that, then we need to track down the guy who did that great YouTube mashup that you found of all the ridiculous references to IP addresses and black hats.
Yeah,
and,
somebody sent servers. That. Somebody sent that in, and there's a YouTube clip. Yeah, of all of the nonsense in two episodes of
just
CSI
two
Cyber.
Episodes, and it felt like, oh my god,
it goes on forever because there's a lot of nonsense. Black hat in the mainframe.
And then it's in the black Wi-Fi. Black hat. IP address. Wi-Fi, and they said Wi-Fi like a billion times, and that thing went for like 4.5 minutes, and it was very funny. But by the 2 minute mark, I like lost my shit. I laughed so hard because I was like, okay, this is two minutes in, and clearly this guy knows that there is no end to the times they will say these things.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Wi-Fi password.
Yep. Your Wi-Fi. It's in the mainframe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you, Michael. I you know, who knows? Maybe I'll watch one of those episodes sometime if I really hate myself. Mm-hmm. Thomas in the 208 with our last comment here. And this is a great one. Jason and Tim, do you think Mad Men will end with Don jumping out a window to match the title credits at the beginning of every episode? I don't see him reaching that level of despair, but it would be an interesting bookend to the series. That made me laugh out loud. The idea that it's revealed that the man who's falling outside the building is Don Draper.
Yeah, there are people who believe that, by the way. And you know what? If that happens, I wouldn't know whether to smash my head or say, oh my god, you
magnificent bastard.
Yes. Oh, you magnificent bastard. I read your book. You know, it's you know what? At this point, I would say it'd be like this long con that we talk about. He could say, yeah, it was right there in front of you the whole time, buddy. You watched it every single show. And then he would topple this little way out. Although I have to tell you, I actually have bought into the idea that someone will go out the window because there is so much window iconography, I should say. And it has been going on for several seasons now where window framing and long stares out of a window and all that became metaphors that were abundant. And so I literally at one point thought, you know, it's going to be Roger. Roger's going to go out the window because he's going to realize that he can only play this heartless Lothario for so long. And now, of course, he's got that incredibly awful mustache on. He might be closer to the end than ever.
That's a cry for help, that facial hair that he's got.
It is so bad. And same thing with Ted. But I love it. I love it. The first time I saw it, I died laughing. I paused the show when I was reviewing it well in advance, and I just cried. I was like, okay, wow. Because we are, and you know, I joked ages ago that I never wanted Mad Men to get into the 70s because who would want to see the clothes? Well, here we are in 1970, and like, yeah, we're full on. It's been a couple of seasons of the clothes getting worse and worse as far as like shape and fabric. And now we're at our all time low in 70s leisure suits. So even Don can't really pull one of those off, but he still sticks kind of traditional stuff. But yeah, I will say, I don't think it's going to be that, but I wouldn't be surprised if somebody goes out a window.
All right. Thomas and the 208 will be watching to see. 208, by the way, Idaho.
Idaho. Nice. Oh, see, I was thinking 208 because I was lulled into the 209.
The 209. Oh, yeah. Not related at all to the 209. I was in the 209, but this is the 208.
You know what? I'm going to throw something out there.
Yeah.
And I think the listeners, based on their Twitter feedback and joy that they get of saying this, I'm going to put this out there. I think we should make a promise, a little social contract between the two of us. If you get sick, because I have a sense that you're catching a cold.
I have a cold right now, in fact.
Okay. So if you're battling the cold, which it sounds like you are.
I am.
Then there is no bet. If you go down and you are bedridden for rest, you must watch CSI
Cyber.
You have them on the DVR. I think that the fans, it's only – I think the fans would want that.
All right, you got it, and you're gonna keep an eye out for something bad that you're gonna throw my way, right?
Yeah, I may send you to do Happy-ish, but yes, but no, this would be good because you don't even have to finish the episode. Just find two or three things that are funny.
So, are you saying that CSI Cyber is like chicken soup for the soul? Is that the C in CSI Cyber or the C in Cyber or something? It's chicken soup.
I think laughter is the best medicine.
All right. Chicken soup intake. CSI. That's what it is.
I think it's laughter's the best medicine.
All right. Well,
you can tackle it.
I will isolate my torso and prepare for
absolutely
some sick bed CSI cyber.
Yes.
All right. Well, so next week I'm going to be traveling again. So I think hopefully Mr. David Lohr will be here to chat with you about whatever happens between now and then.
Wow. Okay. We're going to go pinch hitter. Yeah, David's been a star before.
I'm committing him to something that he hasn't actually agreed to yet, but hopefully he'll show up. And if not, then I will, I will contact you from a remote location on the East Coast and we'll make it happen. But
yes,
everybody should send in their feedback to us because we do read your letters and you may even start a cult like International Hobo Eric. So you never know what might happen when you're right into the TV Talk Machine. You can tweet at Tim at Bastard Machine and I am on Twitter at Jay Snell. And you can also just tweet to at TVTM and we will see those too. You can email us at podcast@tvtalkmachine.com or you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. Tim, it was a pleasure and I'm going to miss you next week probably, but if this cold gets any worse, I promise to report back in 2 weeks with some cyber talk.
Absolutely. Well, my one word to you, my friend, is Theraflu. Just there.
All right.
We go.
Good
Theraflu.
Tip. Theraflu plus CSI Cyber equals delusions. Oh. All right. Yeah. Thanks to everybody out there for listening. We will see you, or at least Tim will, maybe not me. See you next week.
Okay.